If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. The phone number to call in and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That is 718-305-7176. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Everybody's getting ready for Christmas, but appreciate you listening. I've got some good guests lined up tonight. We've got Mike Warner from the Montgomery County Constitution Party. And Mike's going to talk about a little bit the Constitution Party, but he also wants to talk a little bit about the life issue and how important it is to him and how important it is to conservatives and why we need to continue to fight for life. You know, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. That's the first thing. If you don't have life, you're not going to have anything else. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit, and then we're going to have Gary Lima. He's, among other things, a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and he's going to talk a little bit about PC attacks, politically correct attacks on Southern icons. Specifically, there was an incident within the military here in the last couple of weeks where there was a general visiting at some facility and was asking, you know, why we had pictures of Confederate generals like Lee and Stonewall Jackson, who, in his opinion, were enemies. And that he was asking why they were there. And anyhow, he's going to talk about that and talk a little bit about the relationship of the Sons of Confederate Veterans with the VA. And then our last guest tonight is Nader Fahmy, and hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. He is a Coptic Christian originally from Egypt, and he's going to talk a little bit about the persecution of Christians. You know, Egypt is one place, pretty much anywhere in the Middle East, there's a lot of persecution. You don't hear about it like you should. You know, if you get on some of the different websites, you'll hear about it, but you sure don't hear about it in the mainstream press. So he's going to talk to us about persecution of Christians, which is something we should all be concerned about. We've got a few minutes before our guest calls in, but I want to remind you about a very important event coming up on January 11th. It's Tennessee Against Common Core and Education Matters Institute. They are presenting Getting Down to the Core. It's not just about standards. The Master of Ceremonies is Kevin Kukuchi. Special guests are Dr. Duke Pesta. He's the Academic Director of Freedom Project Education and Professor of English at the University of Wisconsin. A special guest is Dr. Chris Tonkin, Assistant Professor, Seton Hall, author of The School Reform Landscape, and special guest, Victoria Jackson of Saturday Night Live. This is Saturday, January 11th, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Embassy Conference Center, 612 West Due West Avenue, Madison, Tennessee. Tickets are $10 plus tax, so it's $11.24 online fee for the online fees. Pay by check, it's $10. You contact Karen Bracken at Reagan.com, and you'll register through Eventbrite. So that's if you want to know what's the real deal is behind Common Core, this is an event you're going to want to attend and hear the scoop, because this affects our kids, this affects our future, and this is where you can really learn about it, kind of get through all the hype. So that's an important event. While we're waiting for our first guest to come on here, I want to talk a little bit. I'm sure, unless you've been under a rock somewhere for the last week or so, you've heard about the Duck Dynasty issue. Phil Robertson basically pretty much quoted the Bible in reference to the issue of homosexuality, and he takes the stance that any legitimate Christian takes, and he goes with what the Bible says and points out that, you know, homosexuality is a sin. And, you know, he pointed that out. He stands by that comment. But no sooner had he done that than A&E came out and, hey, you know, we don't agree with that. And, you know, we're going to suspend you for speaking your mind. Now, he didn't say it on the show. This was in a separate interview. This was a GQ interview that he mentioned it in. Somebody asked him his opinion. He told them. A&E didn't like it, and so they suspended him. The way things are going, I don't see that suspension holding. However, they did suspend him. And then Cracker Barrel. Got to wonder what these guys are thinking. Now, if you've been in a Cracker Barrel, you know, it's an old-timey place. It's an old-time country place, I guess you could call it. And I think most of the people that go there have traditional values. Everything about the place just kind of reeks traditional America. I mean, it just kind of screams at you. And like I say, I think most of the people that go there have that mindset. And Cracker Barrel, or Cracked Barrel, I guess I could call them, came out with this. Initially, they came out with, they said they were going to take their Duck Dynasty stuff off of the shelf. Now, there's conflicting reports. Okay, you know, I hear that Duck Dynasty merchandise is actually merchandise that A&E gets the profits from. Duck Commander profits go to the Robertsons. Now, I called the one here in Clarksville and talked to the manager the other day, and I was told that, okay, that they had sold out of the Duck Dynasty stuff, which does go, according to this manager, to A&E, and they had sold out of the Duck Commander, but that they were restocking the Duck Commander, but at that time they had no intention of restocking the other stuff. So I don't know what the real deal is, but I know, first off, you got to wonder, why did Cracker Barrel, if they felt compelled at all to get involved, I would have thought they would have made an announcement of, hey, you know, we are running a special sale on Duck Dynasty, Duck Commander stuff. But, you know, they took this position, and then when I first talked to the manager, he said, well, you know, the general manager is the corporate, I think is the term he used, said that they're trying to figure out because they don't want to offend anybody. And I said, well, hey, you know, you can't do something that's not going to offend anybody. If you take any kind of a stand, somebody's going to be offended. Now, if you're in the business to make money, and, you know, Cracker Barrel's reasonably priced, but I would not consider them a charity, so they're in the business to make money, then you got to figure out, what do you think most of your customers believe? Where do you think most of your customers are? So you really had to wonder, what were they thinking? So they, number one, they shouldn't have even interjected themselves. If they wanted to interject themselves and say, hey, look, here's an opportunity to make some money, you know, they could have come up with a big Duck Commander sale or something along those lines. But they stuck their foot in there, stuck their foot in their mouth. Now, as I understand it, they've retracted it. But you got to wonder, what were they thinking? And if they could have gotten by with it, if there hadn't been the uproar, then that kind of tells you that corporate at Cracker Barrel, of all places, is apparently sympathetic to the gay lobby. They're either A, sympathetic, or B, cowardly, and were afraid. I guess they thought they would beat them to the punch and they would go ahead and take their stuff off the shelf so as to not offend the radical gay activist out there. Got to wonder what they're thinking. We've got a caller on the line here. This is Kurt. We're going to talk to him for a few minutes, still waiting for Mike to call in. Kurt, how you doing tonight?
Okay, for the most part, Dave, except my blood pressure is up about 15, 20 points. So just being reminded of the subject matter that you were working with there. I don't know.
Cracker Barrel?
My vocabulary. Well, the whole thing, the whole Phil Robertson issue, my vocabulary is inadequate to express my outrage at this unconscionable behavior. My key question in my mind right now over this issue is, how much longer are the American people going to sit by and just remain quiet, just stay silent and not rise up en masse? There should be such a roar over this that it would be deafening.
Well, I think Cracker Barrel is at least getting an earful, and A&E seems to be getting an earful. This is kind of like what happened with the Chick-fil-A situation a few months back. But, you know, here's the thing. We don't need to let this end. We don't need to wait till they do it again. I think we really need to stay on them. I'm glad to see that Phil Robertson has not backed down. He hasn't come back and done the political thing and revise his comments or apologize or grow up. And that's, you know, that's the first mistake the conservatives make. Now, if you say something that just came out wrong, and I don't think there's anything wrong that Phil said. I agree 100% with what Phil said. But, you know, in a case where you maybe were misquoted or you said something you didn't really didn't mean to say, it came out wrong, that's one thing. You come back and you revise your comments and you clarify. But if it's a conviction, you stand by it, and you stand up. That's one of the problems we have is everybody's so afraid. They back. And I understand, you know, these people are under a lot of pressure, but, you know, I'm glad to see Phil has not. And I'm glad to see his family stuck by him. Actually, I would have been very disappointed had they not. But, you know, I don't think this thing is going to go away. Hopefully this will wake more people up, and they'll realize, hey, look, you know, they're not content. These homosexual activists are not content just to come out of the closet. No, they want to come out of the closet and force everything on us, and if we even disagree for whatever reason, they want us to shut up. And that's just not right.
Of course it's not right. That's why my blood pressure is up far more than I wish it was. Physically and emotionally both. I mean, literally, this is an upsetting situation, and I want to see the American people raise up en masse.
Yeah.
Do something.
You don't stay free by
this.
Right. You don't stay free by sitting down. You know, America is still the freest country on earth, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedom away. And our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalowski, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution community with Matthew Opalowski, Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. We got Kurt on the line here on Inside Tennessee, Conservative Nation Media, with Dave Vance, your host. Phone number is 718-305-7176. And, Kurt, let me get back to you. I'm sorry I had to cut you off there. I had to get that plug in.
I know. It's okay. Actually, Dave, this whole situation almost leaves me speechless, and that takes some doing. But I've run out of words. I really have. For the moment, I've just run out of words. I can't find anything that I consider adequate to address this whole situation. So, I don't know what to tell you. I really don't, except you know where I stand and you know how I feel. But something has to be done. We can't continue down this path. We absolutely cannot continue in this direction.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I agree 100%. Got another caller on the line, and I think this may be our guest calling in. Hello, caller.
Hello, good evening.
Hey, Mike, how we doing?
Doing good, doing good. Sorry to be a little bit late here.
Hey, it happens. It happens. I appreciate you calling in. I know the topic was not on your list, but you want to make a comment about the Duck Dynasty situation while you're on the line?
Well,
While Kurt is temporarily speechless.
I didn't hear any news today, so I'm not sure if there's a new development other than I guess Cracker Barrel's put them back in the store.
They backed down.
But, yeah, I'm not up to speed on that one, so I'll have to pass.
Okay, well, we'll kind of stick with what you wanted to talk about. And the first thing was the Constitution Party. How, you know, what was your purpose from going from the GOP to the Constitution Party? And of course, all the obvious questions that you hear, I'm sure you heard from your GOP friends and still hear them. So let's start with that.
Well, I voted for 40 years as a Republican, and it took a long time for me to consider anything else. I really strongly felt that the Republican Party could be restored or brought back to a conservative point of view. But that was without really a good understanding of history and what all has been going on. It's amazing to me how people can walk through life as I did with blinders on and not see that while they talk a good game, in 80 years they haven't done anything, not one thing, to reduce the size and scope of government. They have done entirely the opposite, and in more recent years, all they have done is put up a facade of argument against whatever the Democrats want to do, and then fall in line behind them after an appropriate amount of time, and it just finally hit me after kind of pulling back the curtain a little bit, having run for state representative in 2012, I watched as some very, very good conservative people got the leg shot out from under them for daring to beat the anointed Republican in the primary races. And
to beat him or even to challenge him. Even to challenge him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you see many times where they will actually, the establishment will have multiple candidates running against to divide the vote themselves. And then, of course, they put their money, and they've got lots of it, behind the one that kisses their ring the best. And I put up with it as long as I could. I didn't expect a lot of support being a write-in candidate, so that didn't bother me. But when I saw some very good, like Lori Day, who should have won that race and very nearly did in spite of the GOP, not because of it.
But she got no help from them, and they actively worked against her.
Yes, they did. They did. And she could have, and then at the end of it, the thing that kind of was the spear through the heart for me is afterward they had the little meeting and said how wonderful it was that they had $16,000 left off after the election. $2,000-$3,000 could have made the difference easily for her. It just it was just
very
stupefying.
Mike,
so,
I've got to take a quick break here.
Okay.
I've got to take a quick break, but folks, don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee. We're talking with Mike Warner about the Constitution Party in Tennessee.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
This holiday season, try buying a gift that can really make a difference in someone else's life. Buy your friend, family member, or coworker a goat and help fight hunger in South Sudan. To do so, visit goatsfortheoldgoat.com. There you can buy a goat and also shop for beautiful merchandise made by actual women from South Sudan. One click of a button this holiday season could mean the difference between nourishment and hunger for people who often go days without eating. Goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Again, that's goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. but that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNM for the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie above thy deep and dreamless sleep. The silent stars go by, yet in the dark street shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in the east.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. And we are talking with Mike Warner from the Montgomery County Constitution Party. Mike, before the break, we were talking, you know, 40 years you were a Republican, and you just got frustrated with what you saw. You mentioned the situation in Lori Day's campaign in 2012, where, you know, not only did they not help her, they actively worked against her, and I'm sure she's not the only one, and I'm sure you'll see similar things happen in 2014.
Indeed. And just a few months ago, we saw it happen in Virginia. For the governor's race there, they gave him less than one-third of the amount of money that it took to win the election 4 years prior to that, and they sent a top Republican strategist over to help the Democrat win. So anyway.
What do they say, though, when you run – you know, they talk about, but a third party, you'll split the vote. Yet you let a conservative run, and they won't hesitate to undercut you. They won't hesitate. They would rather have a Democrat win than a conservative win.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If it's a conservative, they've got no. We're not part of their game plan. They don't want to be held responsible to the Constitution. And we can't keep voting for these people. I really resisted. I had a seat on the board of the GOP, was elected to that, and really wanted it to work. But the more I looked at it, the more I tried to make it work, the more I realized I was just feeding the beast that was trying to enslave me. So I started looking at the Constitution Party, and people need to understand that the Constitution Party isn't the Constitution Party of even prior to the 2012 election. A number of the larger Tea Party leaders in the mid-state took an interest in it after getting whooped by the Republicans in the 2012 election and started talking and got several things worked out that they felt they could work with and in fact have pretty well, I won't say taken over the Constitution Party, but what has happened is they've assumed leadership and gladly on the part of those that had the leadership before, they were just sort of marking time in their own words for the energy to come along and propel them to what they knew eventually would have to happen. One of the most important things we did to be different from the Republican or Democrat parties is that we are guaranteed to always be a bottom-up, people-controlled party. Unlike the GOP, who basically the national party tells the state party what to do, and the local parties organizations have nothing of power or influence whatsoever. Very few people know about the state executive committees, but they're the ones that run the state GOP and the state Democrat Party. They, in turn, are controlled by the national party, and based on a lot of comments that I heard after the GOP convention in 2012, basically there's 10 overweight men that run that. So they really don't represent any of us. They represent the interests of people of power and money, and they don't represent the people at all. And in my opinion, now that I look back, you know, I say 2020 vision when you're looking back in the past, and that's pretty much what it is. You don't see what it is. You don't see all the pieces until you're looking back on it, and then you can see things.
You mentioned money, and that's important because what we've gotten out of the Republicans for the last several years is they fake right, go left. And a good example of that, Obamacare. Now, you will hear, pick a rep in Tennessee or otherwise, you will hear, well, I voted to overturn Obamacare 40 times. Ask them how many times they voted to defund it.
Right. And not only that, just prior to voting against it, they voted to move it forward to the vote, to the floor. When you're looking at statistics, you always want to find out who voted to bring it to the floor so that it could be voted on. Obamacare could have been stopped 3 times this past year, and it was not, because it wasn't their will to do so. They want to see an enlarged government just as much as the Democrats do, because the larger the government is and the more power they have over the individual, the more power they have personally.
They don't mind big government. They just want to run the big government.
Right, exactly. But in the Constitution Party, every county chair has a vote at the state level. Okay, and so there's no way that a few men, no matter how old or how amply endowed they are with belt size, can't control the party. Okay, there's a local representative from every county that's seated in the Constitution Party. The other thing that they did that I thought was absolutely phenomenal was the requirement to not only vet candidates, but to get a commitment letter that's equal to a contract that they will vote the Constitution and they will observe their oath of office or face censure. If they're censured 3 times, they lose their party credentials. The state election commission is notified that they can no longer be affiliated with or run as a Constitution Party person, and if they fail to step down as the letter says that they would, the letters go out, press releases go out, and explain exactly why they've been released of their party credentials, which essentially puts them out of the next race. It ends their career. So when someone talks about someone that promises to support the Second Amendment versus someone that's got a legally binding contract that says they will enforce the whole Constitution, and the Second Amendment is definitely part of that, then you know, who would you bet on? The guy that's put his neck on the line to stand up for the Constitution, or the guy that just made a promise like any other politician?
Have a way to hold them accountable and not just wait till the next election. We've got about a minute until the break, and I know that you wanted to talk about the life issue, which, you know, that's another thing where we have a lot of people who claim to be pro-life, yet they have voted to fund Obamacare, which has, you know, money for abortion, and they voted to fund Planned Parenthood because, I mean, they're still getting federal funds. They have been ever since Obama's been in there, and I'm assuming ever since, you know, when George Bush was in there as well. So that's another thing that, you know, they can claim to be pro-life, but if they're advocating money, if they're voting to give money to Planned Parenthood, you really have to wonder, if are they that stupid, or do they think we're that stupid? Got about 30 seconds before the break if you want to start your response on that.
Well, absolutely. Everyone needs to look at the people that are thinking about voting if they're an incumbent, and they voted for the continuing resolutions in 2012 and 2013 than they voted for money for Planned Parenthood. It's as plain and simple as that. So it should be very easy to figure out, you know, who's standing up for life and who is not. And the life is the first of all rights. If you don't have the right to life, you don't have any other right.
Yep. And somebody who will not defend the right to life is not going to defend anything else. Well, let's assume that you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com. You're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution, where America always wins. Don't go away. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. We'll be right back after this very short break.
Foreclosure is hard on every member of the family, but your family is not alone. If you're struggling with your mortgage, there is help. To learn about the government's Making Home Affordable program, visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE to speak to a HUD-approved housing counselor. It's free of charge. Visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE today. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, NeighborWorks America, and the Ad Council.
Dr. Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and the worst injustice imaginable is the wrongful conviction of an innocent person. I'm Sam Thurmond, host of A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com. We take a look at what happens when innocent people go to jail as a result of bad evidence, wrongful prosecution, and dishonest witnesses. We use real cases of actual Americans who've been wrongfully convicted. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, conservativenationmedia.com.
Did say was to certain poor shepherds in fields as they lay, in fields where they lay keeping their sheep on a cold winter's night that was so deep.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking to Mike Warner. He's the interim chairman of the Montgomery County Constitution Party. Mike, before the break, we were talking about the life issue. I've only got a few minutes here, but if you want to talk a little bit about Amendment 1, I know that's something that you and everybody who cares about the life issue in Tennessee wants to see be successful in 2014.
Absolutely. We've been in a very bad position for a state that is as conservative as Tennessee is. For more than 10 years now, after one guy in a black robe decided that there was a constitutional requirement to allow abortion without basically any protections for even the life of the mother, all the laws that Tennessee basically had regarding abortion were swept away, and no additional laws or regulations have been allowed to be made. So Tennessee has become an abortion destination. We're seeing about one in four people that come to have an abortion in our state borders come from out of state. You don't want to name names and things like that, but on any given day, if there's a Planned Parenthood abortion clinic, just go by and see how many out-of-state tags there are, and that's shameful for Tennessee. The other thing is we can't even passed laws regarding the life that protect the life of the mother, that require any kind of understanding of the operation itself, informed consent, much less to see the life that is growing within them on a sonogram, so that they can understand that this isn't just a blob of tissue. Within 10 days of conception, there's a complete DNA separate from the mother. This is a life, and the Constitution guarantees the right to life for its citizens, regardless of their status or age or anything else.
And if real quick, if you could just talk a little bit about the amendment in 2014. We're really crunched on time here, but
okay.
I think it's important that you we can get that
yes,
one across.
Yes, it is. Amendment 1, all it does is give legislators the opportunity to write laws to protect the life of the mother, to put requirements on that other states already have. We just really can't stand to sit by and not allow our legislators, who are elected by us and will do what we as a state want them to do, but they can't do anything at all right now. So we have to do yes on one, and I'd be more than happy to come and speak to any church or any group that wants to hear. My wife is a counselor for Hope Pregnancy here in Clarksville. And she has a speech of her own. And so if there's a church anywhere out there or anything that doesn't feel prepared to be able to speak on this issue, we'd be more than happy to come and do that for them.
And Mike, just let me say, you know, you were at our church about a month ago. Your wife's testimony on this issue, if that doesn't get to you, nothing, you don't have a heart. She does a very good job of explaining the importance of this issue, and Hope Ministries is what she's with, and I can tell you that's a good organization. That's one that me and my wife support and have for several years, and they do a great job for unwed mothers. So, inform yourself about Amendment 1. 2014, we're going to vote on it. It's not just a majority. You have to have 50% plus one, that 50% meaning of the number of voters that voted in the last gubernatorial election. So vote yes on one. I understand you want to know more about it. We're going to have other shows about it, but you need to go out and educate yourself on yes on one. Amendment 1 that will be on the ballot in 2014. It makes the Constitution neutral on the issue of abortion so that we can possibly convince our legislators to pass some reasonable restrictions on abortion. Mike, I appreciate you coming on. Sorry to have to cut you short. We got started a little late, and I've got some other guests lined up, but would definitely love to have you back, and I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Dave. Enjoyed it.
All right. Me too. Take care. Have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Our next guest is Gary Lima. Gary, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me on, Dave.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. You ready for Christmas?
I am more than ready. In fact, I think I've
more than ready.
Probably, yes, I've taken care of my wife for tomorrow night. I think I'm the best Santa Claus this year ever in about 19 years of marriage.
Well, good, good. Took you that long to figure it out, huh?
It took me that long. I'm a slow learner.
Hey, okay, you are a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, recently, I think it was in the Washington Post or maybe in the Washington Times, there was an article about a military I think it was the Army War College, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was some general who questioned why we had pictures of Stonewall Jackson and Lee and others who had fought against America in the Civil War, why they were so prominently displayed at this place. And that's not the only, we have forts named after Confederate generals, you know, Fort Lee, Fort Bragg, you know. But, you know, the PC crowd seems like they want to do away with anything that favorably portrays Southern icons. And
apparently that's their agenda, which is a furtherance of the agenda of the Obama administration over the 5 years now. I've been a commander of Sons of Confederate Veterans Camp down in Franklin, Tennessee. I've been in a long time. And the thing that bothers me about all this is in all my military schools as an officer and in a significant number of schools, we always studied the Southern leadership because it was very effective, it was very loyal, and these were real believers. And, of course, those of us that have our namesake tied with the South during that war, you know, there's this thing called sacred ground. What's amazing to me is there was a reconciliation that took place, and it was under the FDR administration. I hope liberals listen to this, FDR administration, where the Congress passed a bill, and the President of the United States at that time, FDR, I believe it was 33, signed into law that all Confederate veterans were American veterans. Therefore, when I was an SEV commander, Sons of Confederate Veterans Commander, I was obligated, as is the United Daughters of the Confederacy, all of us, to maintain those graves of those Confederate, what we call heroes, Southern heroes, in the fight for Southern independence. And that was the history. That's the truth, as we know it. And the VA is obligated, even as now, as we speak today, to provide bronze placarding for the names of individuals, members of units, regiments, whatever, to be placed on whatever monument that needs to be dedicated. My John Hunt Morgan camp just last year dedicated a monument in Springfield, Tennessee. And the placarding came from the VA. All the headstones, those little cement headstones that are provided at private and national cemeteries for Confederates are provided by the VA. In other words, the taxpayer is paying for American veterans to be honored. That was part of the reconciliation. And right now it looks like somebody wants to unreconcile, and now they're touching on sacred ground.
Yeah. Let me step in here just a second, Gary. All of us at Conservative Nation Media are proud to bring you our second annual Christmas Eve Music and Kids Extravaganza special on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, starting at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on Christmas Eve. You can listen to hours of great traditional American Christmas music live or download it to listen when you need to be reminded of the true glory and meaning of Christmas. And you can only get it from our website, conservativenationmedia.com. And don't forget to have your kids write Santa a letter from our website or to santaclaus@conservativenationmedia.com, and Santa will send back a personalized email within 48 hours. Santa's on email. Wow. From all of us at conservativenationmedia.com to all of you, the warmest and most joyous Merry Christmas, and thanks for listening. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking with Gary Lima. He's a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. We're talking about the fact that the Sons of Confederate Veterans are, in fact, sanctioned by the Veterans Administration. Back to you, Gary.
Well, actually, the soldiers themselves are. And we, as the SEV, take very careful care of the cemeteries and the graves as we find them. There are a lot of private cemeteries where there might be an occasional Confederate veteran that's buried there, or even the more commonly known, for example, the cemetery in Franklin, Tennessee, which has over 1,400 dead in there. That's owned by the UDC, and the Sons of Confederate Veterans take care of it. Those are American veterans by act of Congress under the FDR administration. It was part of the reconciliation to acknowledge that this was an American fight. That's it. And these are not vilified human beings. These are our people.
Yeah,
and that should never, don't, you know, I understand the Duck Dynasty controversy and just go after that and whatever to fill, but the left has been wide open for 5 years, and when you start going after something that is, you know, God sacred, yes, but now even your people, is that necessary? The war's over. It's been fought. The battlefield and all that's concluded. And as an American veteran, modern days, I have a hard time with that. I have a hard time with vilifying and saying these people were against the American government. No, they weren't. They wanted out, and that's it. And they voted, and the people voted, and there were referendums, and they left. And that's because they were threatened, and South Carolina went. That is history. You can't rewrite it. And you honor the dead. These weren't criminal people. These were honorable human beings. And the American fight, I thought, was over. To begin again, is that the role of the Obama administration, the Arab Spring, stir it all up, get governments toppled, and now let's go after our own people? Don't walk on that ground. Because if someone has to choose between a namesake and family and a way of life and a memory and a remembrance and what's considered honorable and sacred, don't touch it. Leave it alone. But apparently now the administration wants to not even leave that alone.
Yeah. Well, and this started well. I mean, in fairness, it did start well before him. Obviously, it's ratcheted up. But, I mean, you know, I was in the military, you were in the military, and, you know, we've heard all of the, no matter where we've been, even when we were stationed in the South, we would hear people from other parts of the country put down the South, put down the Confederacy, put down the past, and also try to make it sound as if everybody in the South is backward, everybody in the South is a racist, everybody in the South, you know, goes to Ku Klux Klan rallies on the weekend. I mean, that's the kind of garbage you hear in the military directed towards people from the South and people who, you know, whose ancestors may have fought for the South. But they've been attacking it for a long time. I expect it'll pick up, it'll increase and get worse, is my fear. Gary, we've got to take a real quick break.
It's never been made official. Now it's official.
Right. Right.
Were they going to rename all the forts in the South? I mean, Billy Mitchell, where did he come from? Where did Patton come from? Where did a lot of the modern-day greats come from? They came from the South. If it wasn't for the South, in the Vietnam War, during the Vietnam War, it was the Northeasterners that were burning the flags and the Californians. You didn't see that in the South.
You don't
dishonor something, and that's a Southern thing. You're a patriot. You'll fight, but you won't burn.
Well, hey, don't go away. We'll be right back with more after this quick break. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Hey, there he is. How's it going?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you going to shake my hand or what?
I'm having a stroke.
Wow, you're not even moving your arm.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you okay?
I'm having a stroke.
Your face looks weird, too.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you having a seizure or something?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST, F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately. Because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me.
please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. And we're speaking with Gary Lima, and we are talking about Southern icons being under attack by the politically correct out there. Gary, you know, one of the things we're talking about before the break was how many greats, I mean, if you think about it in the military schools, now, you were an officer, I wasn't, but even most of what I have read, when you talk about military leaders that are emulated, I'm sorry, the majority of them are from the South. I mean, the one from the North that stands out in my mind is Chamberlain from Gettysburg, at the Battle of Gettysburg. But most of the others that they talk about, they do talk about the Southern generals.
That's absolutely true. Now there's one that the South doesn't revere. In fact, it took until about 5 years ago before North Carolina would even have a monument to General Hood because of the Battle of Franklin here in Tennessee as late as November 30, 1864. But you know, Grant it kind of gets a pass as a, you know, he was, in fact, he wasn't even really liked by his own army. In fact, he was put out as a drunkard, and then you know, the war broke out. About 10 years later, he ends up back in. And he was a fighter, and he was respected on the northern side because he got the job done. Of course, when it came to
quit.
The number of...
He wasn't overly cautious.
But
like
it didn't matter. It was a hamburger machine. I mean, when you're out number 4-1, he was running the hamburger through. Losses were high. For the South, generalship was very important, and there were a couple that weren't that great, but most of the commanders... were really good, and the loss of a good commander was bad. But when you're outnumbered 4-1, that's a bad day. 2-1 was considered a good day, and the resources and people weren't there. The population was 4-1 against. So, you know, there was, I learned nothing bad about generalship in general as far as Southern commanders go. Stonewall Jackson, I mean, he was known as having an infantry that could move like cavalry on foot. He managed to move men, in 100 miles in a day. I don't know how you do it. I've been on 25 mile force marches when I was a young Marine enlisted man. He managed the Southern soldier, even Winston Churchill said, was the finest army in history. What these guys sacrificed. And what their general officers, including Robert E. Lee, who, by the way, was a Union man, what they had to put into the fray was everything they had. And they did it with total love of country, the South. In fact, one of the hardest problems in the embassy world, consulate world in Europe for American diplomats was, how do you justify doing to your own people when you justify breaking away from the British crown?
Yeah.
I mean, and it was 1.3 million killed or wounded to force a bunch of states together. No military ever had to do that in history. But putting that aside, honor the dead. I would, as an American veteran, no more disrespect the dead of a Russian soldier, a Chinese soldier, a North Vietnamese soldier. You don't do it. You don't even disrespect their leaders. Now, if they're involved in war crimes, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But you don't disrespect the sacrifice of the veteran. And the American veteran is a Southerner, too. And that's the FDR administration wrote it into law.
Yeah. And this reminds me of something that happened. This probably about 15 years ago when I was still in, I was stationed down at Fort Bragg, and they have a Confederate cemetery there on Fort Bragg. And this came to light. I don't know whatever happened. I think there was an apology, but it did not hurt the guy's career. He went on to be a general. they were out in the training areas, and that's where there's little Confederate cemeteries all through the area there, the training area at Fort Bragg. And this lieutenant colonel at the time, he was my battalion commander. This was right after the flags, some Confederate flags had been put up on the cemetery. And he got out of his vehicle and went over there, and I don't know if he did it to all of them. I think maybe just one of them trashed one of the flags and made a comment about, a bunch of racist or, the Confederacy was all about slavery or whatever. And his driver was upset. His driver was from, somewhere in the South. And so there was a complaint made, but nothing happened. I mean, I think he made an apology, but that's it. It never hurt his career. It did not hurt his career
30,
at all. He went on to be a general.
30 years ago, he would have ended up in trouble many years before that. And it wasn't about slavery either. We don't have time on your program to understand that.
No, we don't want to refight it here tonight.
No, we don't want to do that. But the bottom line is that wouldn't happen. And I've been retired from active duty now, 17 years. I went to Marines in 71. When you know your own history, you know it. It's amazing. General Forrest had a number of stars on him, and he was an Air Force commander in World War II. That is the grandson of Nathan Bedford Forrest. My youngest boy is named after Nathan Bedford Forrest and John Hunt Morgan. And, Southerners have been patriotic. We were patriotic during the Vietnam War. And the North and Easterners were not, and that's a fact. And out of California. My dad came back from Vietnam, the worst year, Tet Offensive year and all that, and they were told to take their uniforms off. But you want to be caught at an airport uniform on. The Southerners don't do that. There's things that are called sacred. I would no more disrespect my enemy who wore the uniform because he fucked it. There's an ideology now that says that you can't think this, you can't think. In fact, you can be an American veteran, dead in the ground, Confederate. What are they going to do next? Order the VA to stop providing the little stones, headstones, and no more placarding in bronze? Is that how we reconcile a nation, or is this about de-reconciling a nation? If I have to make a choice, Dave, between what's sacred and what's sacrificed and this kind of government, you already know my choice.
Yeah.
Because you can't defy your own self. You can't do it. Nobody should be allowed to do that.
So tell me some of the other, some of the educational things that the Sons of Confederate Veterans do in coordination with the VA. I mean, is the only thing the VA provides is it just the placards
that's
and stones?
The placards and stones, that's the only real relationship there, and that came directly from the FDR administration and Congress at the time. In fact, there were some surviving Confederate veterans, believe it or not, because boys from 12 years of age and men in their 70s actually fought in the Confederate armies. There were three of them that made up the entire system, Army of Northern Virginia, Army of Tennessee, and the Army of Trans-Mississippi. But there were some there for the signing and the law in honoring them as veterans who fought their fight for what they believed in. What we do as Sons of Confederate Veterans is we have monthly programs, and we watch out for grave sites, and we try to educate the public as to why they fought and the history of all the units and flag preservation. That's a big thing in Tennessee, as it is other states. And just to keep alive the history so that folks – can see that, there was another viewpoint, and it was a strong viewpoint, and it was worth dying for. And ultimately and foremost, always honoring the sacrifice of that military guy for Southern independence.
Yeah. Hey, Gary, you mentioned the Army of Tennessee. Now, we've got to take a break. I'm up against a hard break. But when we come back, can you talk a little bit about the Army of Tennessee and some of the different engagements they are involved in?
Sure.
Okay. All right, don't go away. We'll be back after this very short break.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Hey, everybody. Rachel Ray here. Nothing puts a bigger smile on my face than cooking up a big meal for family and friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in America who are struggling with hunger. These children, that's one out of every five, often have to skip meals because there's just nothing to eat in the kitchen. Yet there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food produced right here in America to feed every last hungry child. If only there was a way to get it to them. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families all across our country. But they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America at your local food bank and at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
God rest you, merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking with Gary Lima. He is a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, among other organizations he's involved with. Gary, we're going to talk a little bit about the Army of Tennessee. That's something that you mentioned before the break. And if you can kind of, I know they were involved in a lot of very important engagements. And if you could give us a quick rundown of that.
Well, sure. Well, the two, or actually three biggest known engagements are Murfreesboro, Stones River. There was, you know, Donelson and the minor forts out west on the Mississippi River early in the war, but later on, after the Federals occupied Nashville, Middle Tennessee was kind of up for grabs, and it continued to be contentious. The Army of Tennessee fought at Stones River. There were a Tullahoma campaign, a number of give-and-take fighting. The Army of Tennessee moved up into Kentucky, which eventually ended up in the Battle of Perryville, Kentucky, which was Perryville. Kentucky, by the way, did not go with the South. By one vote, the state legislature could not secede, or the vote wasn't for secession, but many Kentuckians joined the Army of Tennessee. So there was a major battle. There was a Kentucky campaign, a major battle in Perryville. And of course, Morgan's famous raids from Indiana across Kentucky into Ohio, being a member of the Army of Tennessee. But the Army of Tennessee actually, finally after the Battle of Perryville, moved back through Springfield and on down south, further south and below Murfreesboro and in that area, and ended up fighting at Chickamauga, which was a major battle in September, middle September, for about five days altogether when you consider the first shooting and the end of it, and it was a Confederate victory in 1863 in the fall. And those were the major ones that was involved in. They were part of other campaigns further south. They were Price's Crossroads, Parker's Crossroads out west, and that sort of thing. And they were a very active army. The Battle of Franklin is considered to be like Gettysburg. It doesn't have much, historical narrative in the popular sense. Everyone concentrates on Gettysburg because that's where Lee was defeated. But November 30, 1864, very late in the war, the Battle of Franklin was won. It was at a very high cost, which you call a pirate victory, and then the Battle of Nashville followed. Came up about 36,000 troops, about not quite 30,000, whatever, involved in the major engagement of Franklin, and it was costly. In fact, General Hood is not highly regarded for his actions there because he just didn't do some of the things that military guys would consider you should have done. It's almost like Gettysburg. You know, General Lee, you shouldn't have done this front assault, and you should have emphasized more on your flank, and maybe you should have given a lot more latitude or been more specific. Put that aside, that's a military event, and it ended in defeat at Gettysburg. Franklin ended up in defeat, but there was the Battle of Nashville later on, and we could go into a bunch of detail on that. And that was a major Tennessee victory. Names like Claiborne came out of it because of heroic actions. Like the Atlanta campaign and anything else, it got to the point in the war even where Union leadership, guys would cry because of the slaughter, grown men. And I would say the Army of Tennessee, which, by the way, there were three armies. Army of Tennessee, just take a slice, east of the Mississippi, the eastern mountains there, and you go south to the Gulf, and there's the Army of Tennessee. You go west of the Mississippi, that's the Army of Trans-Mississippi. And by the way, Texas was never taken by the Federals, never occupied. Those were failed expeditions there. And then the Army of Northern Virginia, which generally, that's the famous icon. A lot of sacrifice there. North Carolina alone didn't see too much action, and they had some of the most horrendous casualties providing troops for the Army of Northern Virginia, but not until late in the war was that state really, Sherman's March, all that stuff, affected. And that's kind of a short course.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the fight now, because, as the politically correct activist out there, and maybe with the support of the administration or maybe not, they're not going to stop attacking everything Southern. Certainly anything that has any relation to the old Confederacy. I mean, you've seen it on the battles with the flag battles in South Carolina, Georgia, and other places. So does the Sons of Confederate Veterans, or do they get involved in that in any way in terms of, standing up for their heritage? Do they lobby on those issues or organize?
Oh, yes. We lobby. We have our own magazine that comes out. We lobby, we fight for the names of parks. We get involved in protests, peaceful local protests, that sort of thing. We're not going to stop, and we're not going to be defeated. The sad fact, though, is we're apolitical. But at the same time, and we're not trying to be sectarian, but at the same time, enough's enough. Now, I can remember as a boy, and I'm 60 years old, so I think I have the right to be able to say I know a little bit about life and experience. I can remember when Coca-Cola commercials had Stonewall Jackson with his foot on the stone wall, whatever, And it was a Coca-Cola commercial, and it was about a Hard Day's Fight.
Yes, I don't remember that one. That must be a little before my time.
You might not remember, but I do remember that one. That was on billboards, okay? It's almost like we're not going to have a reconciliation. We're not going to be Americans. Now we're going to be, there's going to be one ideology that's going to win. And states' rights is still viable. Because just look at Duck Dynasty, that fiasco over the past few days. I mean, if money is everything, and I don't want to offend anybody, but the truth of the matter is, in the Bible Belt, money is not God. But elsewhere,
well,
apparently it is.
I would say, unfortunately, there are a lot of people in the South, and it has nothing to do with where they're from. They've given up.
A lot of people have given up.
I mean, you know, I think a lot of people can be bought regardless of where they're from, South.
Well, that's true, and that's where I want to be able to correct my own self, because, you know, I want to preface, I don't want to be offensive. But for those of us still believe, there's something that is not for sale. Principles not for sale. Your honor code is not for sale. They shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And yes, there are a lot of people that are bought into it. I mean, look who's owned the public school system since we've had a National Education Association since when? Back in the early 1900s.
70s.
Look at the game. They have eradicated the truth of American history. Why, you know, they don't even want to recognize that the first firing at Sumter was by General B.T. Beauregard, a Creole. And the last Confederate general to surrender was Stan Waite, Cherokee Indian, commander of the Cherokee Brigade. The highest ranked Hispanic was Colonel Benavides, Texas Brigade. That there were about 6,000 Jewish boys, and the biggest synagogues were down in the South, like Charleston, whatever. I mean, there were Jewish men in the Confederate Army. The chaplain of the Confederate armies, the overall known as loosely the chaplain overall. There's a high school down here in Nashville named after him. He was Catholic. The Jewish rabbi won a week in the first year. Oh yeah, the first year of the secession, the first year where the war was going to be the real possibility. War was going to be a real possibility. Lincoln was raising 75,000 troops from other states. That was a big mistake, having them name, you know, their regiments and states and come down with their flags. To come through Sumter, which started the actual firing, which a minority was the commanding general of when the firing started. That's real history. That is real history.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing to me that is not even mentioned. That it was a Catholic priest known as the poetic priest of the Confederacy.
Yeah, wow, I hadn't heard
Jewish
that.
Jewish Confederacy. How about Hispanic soldiers over 5,000? Where did that name come from? Northwest.
That's
Carter,
not a Smith
Spain?
Or a Jones, I noticed.
Yeah, how about this? In Hohenwald, Tennessee.
Sounds German.
It's German. Well, there was a unit raised. I believe they're infantry. I'm not 100% whether they were cavalry or not, but they were raised from that surrounding area and whatever. And they were, you know, just other people in the raising, because the companies were raised out of counties, right? He was German. He couldn't speak English.
I've got to step in here. I've got to do a quick read and
sure.
Right back to you. All of us at Conservative Nation Media are proud to bring you our second annual Christmas Eve Music and Kids Extravaganza special on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, starting at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on Christmas Eve. You can listen to hours of great traditional American Christmas music live, or download it and listen to it when you need to be reminded of the true glory and meaning of Christmas. And you can get it only from our website, conservativenationmedia.com. And don't forget to have your kids write Santa a letter from our website, or go to SantaClaus@conservativenationmedia.com, and Santa will send back a personalized email within 48 hours. From all of us at Conservative Nation Media, to all of you, the warmest and most joyous Merry Christmas, and thanks for listening. Back to you, Gary. We've got a few more minutes left here, but by the way, we've still got Kurt on the line. Kurt, do you want to get in here a little bit? You have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I'm just thoroughly enjoying Gary's refresher course on some of the events of the Confederate War there, the Civil War and the Confederate Army. I used to consider myself a fairly good student of Civil War history. Of course, I've forgotten a lot of it, some of the things that he reminded me of there. But anyway, good job, Gary. Keep up the good work. Back to you, Dave.
Kurt, does it
Thank
count
you, Tom.
Being a Can you count being a student if you were actually there? Just kidding, Kurt. Couldn't help it.
Merry Christmas, Dave.
Merry Christmas, Kurt.
Let me tell you something, too, if I could, real quick, and I know we're short on time. There were a lot of black troops in the Confederate Army. The Army of Tennessee in particular, since that's the focus here, those units were integrated. A large majority infantry units, a number of cavalry units with black troops. Some were free, some were slave. You know, if they were slave, they wanted to go with their colonel that raised the regiment. That was fine. General Forrest's escort had black troopers with them, cavalry escort. I mean, we could go on and on about the real complexion. The regiment that defended New Orleans in the Army Trans-Mississippi area, they were black Confederate troops. You know, that's the truth. I wish the American people really knew the truth about our history, and it would heal a lot of wounds. It really would. We could be able to say, you know, we're Americans. In that arena, we had this bad fight. We had this argument. But there's a lot of people who sacrificed and need to be honored, and now the left wants to go ahead and dishonor them. And I just don't, you know, to me it looks like it's hate on the highest level, whatever. I wish we had the time we could do, you know, do a talk. You can go visit your local SEV camp and be a guest, and you'll be surprised at things that you learn. It's not about hate. It is about heritage. And just like the guy Phil, you know, I love humanity. But history is history. You don't change it. You don't vilify people. If you want to have another fight, then you can go ahead and vilify people. You know, there's a point where hurt hurts and it hurts enough. And if you're not going to back off, then something's pushback comes. I think Cracker Barrel's just found that out in A&E. Get off it. Let's move on into
hopefully
the
more
future.
Hopefully more people will stand up and stop being bullied by the politically correct on the left and, you know, not back down, say what you believe. It doesn't necessarily
yeah. –
everybody doesn't have to agree with you. I mean,
no,
you know, me and you are agreement on most things, but we're probably not agreement 100% on everything. But, you know, people, that's part of being in a free country is people can disagree. You're free to disagree. And, you know, somebody's not going to go out and try and ruin you just because you happen to disagree. Well, Gary, I appreciate you being on with us. I appreciate all the information, and we'll definitely have you back on sometime. But thanks again, and have a Merry Christmas.
Yes, sir. Merry Christmas to you and all of us Americans.
North and South. Thanks, Gary. Take care.
Good night, sir.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will have Nader Fahmy with us, and we're going to talk about Christian persecution. Nader is a Coptic Christian originally from Egypt who lives in Tennessee now. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
The Internet's official Rhino Hunting Safari.
Adopting a new pet is a rewarding experience. And Shelter Pets make super pets. Your new best friend will steal your heart, bring you happiness, and enrich your life for years to come. You can make a difference in the life of an animal. Adopt and bring home a Shelter Pet today. To find out more, visit theshelterpetproject.org. This message has been brought to you by the Humane Society of the United States, Maddie's Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kathy Henners, your host of Daily Roll Call on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Whether you're surrounded by friends and family or far away protecting our country, may you find joy, love, and peace. Merry Christmas!
Thank you.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. Our next guest is Nader Fahmy, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He is a Coptic Christian, originally from Egypt, which is, as I understand it, where all the Coptic Christians are from. Nader, how are you doing tonight? Did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did fine. It's going well. Thank you, Dave.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for being with us. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit now. Okay, Coptic Christians are exclusively from Egypt. Is that accurate?
That is very accurate. The Coptic Church was established by Saint Mark, the disciple of Jesus, shortly after, when Saint Mark was alive, so it's shortly after Jesus was ascended to heaven.
Oh, okay. And if now we've heard a little more lately, although it doesn't get the playtime that it should, it's not getting the attention it should, about the persecution of Christians. And of course, we know there's been a lot of persecution of the Coptic Christians in Egypt, and that's not really anything new, is it?
No, that's not really anything new. That just happened to be in the surface recently. Well, every now and then it comes in the service and it goes away. But this is really has been going on ever since the year 400 after the Muslim invaded Egypt, over Egypt, and called it their country. Ever since that, the Egyptian of Egypt, the Christians of Egypt, has been under persecution since. It probably was severe at some point in the history, and it probably wasn't as severe at other points. But at the end of the day, the Coptic Christians in Egypt has always been under persecution in some sort of way.
1,600 years of persecution by the Muslims.
Yeah, about 1,600 years of persecution. That's pretty true.
You know, that's not common knowledge.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's really the entire Middle East region, but specifically Egypt, because the Christians in Egypt has always been, the Egyptian church, which is the Coptic church, has always been a stronger church. Usually the way the persecution volume goes according to how strong the church is. For example, I'm not sure in what year, but the governor or whoever was in charge decided that the Christian people must wear very heavy metal crosses around their necks to show who they are. Well, not one Christian decided not to wear the cross around his neck. They all was wearing the cross and was happy wearing the cross. In other stories where the Christians must have rode their donkeys upside down. No one acted
what?
Like he's Muslim. Yeah. Back in the donkey's days, the Christians were told that they must ride their donkeys upside down. I'm not sure how they done it, but yeah, that was a... I'm not sure under which Islamic governor, but it did happen in the history too. And much more, really, Dave.
Now, okay, your family is from Cairo, correct?
Yes.
And from our conversation the other day, you lived in a Christian neighborhood, which, relatively speaking, was fairly safe in that Christian neighborhood?
That is correct. Egypt, Cairo has, the majority of Christians are in particular neighborhoods, and they are pretty much secured. However, see, the media does kind of similar to what happens in here. They only show you what they want to show you or what the people who are in authority want them to show you. So when in Mubarak's days, for example, nothing came to the media at all, no matter what happened to the Christians anywhere in Egypt. You wouldn't hear about it on the media. And then after Mubarak, when the social media was more popular and the Facebook and the Twitter, was everywhere in the land of Egypt, that's when things started being heard of more and more. When the Muslim Brotherhood was in power, even though they tried to act like they are the cool guys and they don't differentiate between Christians and Muslims, but that had nothing to do with what was in reality. In reality, it was not. The persecutions against Christians was extremely severe during the Muslim Brotherhood's time. But the persecution under the Muslim Brotherhood was against everybody who is not with them. So that's why it happened what happened, and the Egyptian people decided to throw them out of power.
Right. So, It was worse during the Muslim Brotherhood time than Mubarak, somewhat?
It was worse in a way that it was all over the country. See, Mubarak kept the big cities secured and safe, because that's where the press are, that's where the media are, that's what CNN knows how to get around. But no one knows anything about anything out of Cairo, Alexandria, Luxor, which were the ancient Egyptian stuff, are that kind of thing. But in the Muslim Brotherhood, the entire country was in chaos, and the Egyptians were persecuted everywhere and anywhere.
Okay.
It's very common in Egypt, in the villages, in particular, or the little cities that are between villages, not as big as Cairo. For some argument to happen over any reason or any story that you can really, very rarely that you can really know what exactly happened, how did it start. But it ended up with a few Christian businesses are broken in and demolished, and a church or two are burned, and 20, 30 families are leaving the entire village because they can no longer live there. These things happen quite often in Egypt, but you didn't hear about it in Mubarak's days as much. We heard about it more on the Muslim Brotherhood's days and on these current days that we have.
And part of that's because of the social media.
Part of that because of the social media. Correct. And part of it because of the chaos everywhere.
Yeah. Okay, well, that makes sense. Now, let's talk about Qushan. What kind of persecution are we? I mean, what would happen?
When you are a Christian living in Egypt, you kind of live the life of a second degree citizen. So, for example, the Congress and whatnot doesn't have Christians, and if it does, it have like two or three that are more likely not watching for the Christians people's best interest, and they are just there to be there. For you to build a church, for example, it's not like when you build a mosque. If you want to build a mosque, there is a ministry, just like the Ministry of Education and Ministry of Foreign Affairs and whatnot, that takes care of mosques, and they build the mosque. The country builds any mosques anybody want to build. But if you want to build a church, is no such, you have to build it with your own money or with the church's money. And you have to get a permission from the president himself.
From the president himself?
Yeah. The president of the country himself must sign a permission to build a church. Not just to build a church, actually. It's a common joke in Egypt. It's not really a joke, it's true. If you wanna renovate a bathroom, you must get a permission from the president himself.
Oh wow!
If you wanna change some walls around, yeah, you can do anything without a permission from the president himself in a church in the land of Egypt. That's for anywhere in Egypt.
It sounds like the presidents in Egypt have the type of power that our president seems to want.
You know, that could be true. But actually, that doesn't apply to any other kind of business. It only applies for churches. And that was just one way to make things much harder for Christians as far as building churches and or renovating them or having them protecting him from falling off.
Ah, okay. Wow, that sounds like a real hassle. Got to do a quick read here. One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad that you did. We are talking with Nader Fahmy, a Coptic Christian, originally from Egypt, talking about Christian persecution. We've got to take a quick break, but don't go away. We'll be right back.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Meadows, your host on Grit and Grace. Please join us every Tuesday night from 10 to 12 Eastern for an honest look at the top political and cultural issues that are affecting Americans today. That's Grit and Grace for conservative analysis that is smart and entertaining. Tuesdays, 9 to 11 p.m. Central, 10 to 12 Eastern on conservativenationmedia.com.
Commercial will be over in a minute. Back to Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we are talking to Nader Fahmy, a Coptic Christian who lives here in Tennessee now. Nader, you were talking about how difficult they make it to build a new church. You have to get permission from the president of the country. So needless to say, there's probably not a lot of new churches in Egypt. Is that
No, very few new churches. In a matter of fact, the older churches that are a part of what tourists would love to see and have in Egypt are not even taken care of. Like, for example, we have a church that's called the Hanging Church. Because of the way that church is built, if you're an engineer and you know about engineering, you would feel that this church should not stand or cannot stand or should not last for a longer time. Well, this is one of the oldest churches in Egypt. And the people, when they go to Egypt and they hear about it and they see it and whatnot, they are amazed that this church doesn't have lines and lines of people from everywhere who want to look at it. But the authorities in Egypt don't care much for the Coptic history to inform the entire world about it or market it out there to bring more tourists to Egypt, which would have been a very good source of income, though.
Yeah.
But that never was an area of interest to the authority. That's just enough. Go ahead.
Okay, so in addition to make it hard to even have a church and I guess to even repair a church, I mean, even to do a repair, you have to get permission from the president to do a repair or to do
anything.
Remodeling, anything you want to do. Good Lord, yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
All right, now, so the more dangerous places are those away from Cairo, those that are out in the boonies, or, you know, just further away from, if you're not in a heavily Christian populated area, you're really at the mercy of the local populace. Is that pretty accurate?
That is very accurate, especially recently, though. Recently, it really wouldn't matter where you are. The people, see, the Muslim Brotherhood fed the people the hate, and the people became hateful to Christians more and more. See, this didn't exist 67 years ago. Everybody was living together and friends together, and nobody had issues with anybody. But
really?
If you... Like, for example, very small example, and one of the examples I like most. If you look on the older, we had an older singer that was very famous everywhere in Egypt. If you look on her parties that she had on the biggest theater in Egypt, you see a lot of men and a lot of women. You would hardly find any woman with a head cover. Whether she's Muslim or Christian, it didn't matter. All of them are dressed nice. All of them had no head covers at all. In a matter of fact, the Muslim leader, their wife, did not have head covers either. And they have some pictures showing some wives of theirs. And they didn't have
now,
no head covers.
Now, what time frame is this? 60, 70 years ago?
This is like on the 60s or before, shortly before, around the 60s and before. Perhaps the 70s.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All these came with the radicalization that started going with the Muslim Brotherhood and other groups that promoted hate. That's when the Christians become persecuted more and more in the recent days. That's when the Christians didn't have any representation anywhere in authority. That's when being a Christian was you wouldn't find, for example, a big employee anywhere that's Christian. You won't find anybody in the media that's Christian.
So most of your life, then, it's been that way in Egypt most of your life, then?
Yes, absolutely. That's how it's been most of my life. That is correct.
Now, okay, employment is an issue. You don't have a lot of Christian-owned businesses, then? Is that what I understood?
That's what you do, is you own your business. That's what most Christians do. But see, you grow up in that environment and you don't notice a lot of things before you're an adult. Like, for example, when you go to elementary school or primary school or after, you must memorize parts of the Muslim religion, like the Quran. It's a part of what you study, and you must learn it in order if you want to pass. You must study the religion, and you must participate on it. But, of course, nobody learns anything about Christianity. They don't teach you anything about Christianity, but they want you to learn the Quran. They want you to learn how they pray. They want you to learn a lot of things. Even though you're Christian, that didn't matter. What else? It's a lifestyle that after some time, you don't feel that it shouldn't have been that way. Girls, for example. Well, of course, the Christians' girls don't cover their heads, while the Muslim girls do. Today in Egypt, most women on the streets are cover their heads, which means automatically if she does not have her head covered, then she's more likely to be Christian. And those girls have a lot of
heads. Is that dangerous for her?
That is dangerous for her. That is dangerous for you also if you hang a golden cross around your neck. That is dangerous for you too.
You can't walk around with
anybody
a cross
on
your
the
neck.
Street. No, you can't. Because anybody on the street can cuff you out, can take it off your neck and throw it. Another thing that happens in Egypt quite often, that was in my days and even before my days. Anywhere you have a church, they must build a mosque in front of it. It doesn't matter how much will they pay somebody to leave their house, but they must build a mosque in front of it.
So you got to get permission from the president to build your church, and then there's got to be a mosque in front of it.
They must build a mosque in the front of it, yes. In a matter of fact, even on, you know, that Egyptians have, or Coptic, the Coptic church has monks in the deserts, where they live in the deserts.
Yeah.
They build their own monastery, and they live there. And even the monks in the deserts, the authority wanted to build a mosque in the desert, in the middle of nowhere, in the front of the monastery, just to bother the monks.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
That is
didn't
ridiculous.
Go very far.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, now, obviously it's difficult, but, I mean, it's also, I mean, if anybody has followed this, and they didn't hear it from the mainstream news, but if you're on the Internet, that you know that in the last, especially the last few years in Egypt and other parts of the Middle East, a lot of Christians have been killed by Muslim extremists, whether they're Muslim Brotherhood or what. So a lot of Christians have been killed. Women have been raped. They've killed children. They've burned down churches, destroyed buildings. Is that what you grew up with, or is that just what you've seen more recently?
That's the more recent stuff. That's the stuff that did not happen in Mubarak's days. That severe, big-scale operations that did not happen in Mubarak's days. Like how that last time after the Morsi was ousted, how they burned, I think, 80 churches. 80 churches.
Wow.
And Christians' businesses, and killed hundreds of people, though. It was very, very sad, but operations on that bigger scale did not happen in Mubarak's days.
Well, now, okay, Egypt has replaced, they've taken the Muslim Brotherhood out of power, or at least officially out of power. I know they still have a lot of influence. So now that the military, I guess, has taken back over, how is it for Christians there now?
Now, the Muslim Brotherhood and other extremists are everywhere on the street. They are not an authority, but they are on the streets. They refuse the military actions. But the people, the regular Muslim people who have businesses or who want to have a life away from the radical Islam, they do not want any Islam in political life anymore. They realize that it was a big mistake to take the Muslim Brotherhood. They realize that all what they sold them was lies, and they do not want it anymore. So you really have a new group now that refuses for the political life to be Islamic, which are the regular Muslims. Like the rich ones, for example. Any rich Muslim in Egypt does not want any Muslim Brotherhood anymore. And the Christians, of course,
Great.
Do not want any Muslim Brotherhood anymore. Even though Mubarak's days was miserable for Christians, but it wasn't as severe as how it is now. And the same with Sadat before Mubarak. It was bad for Christians, but it wasn't as severe as after them.
Yes, it is.
They did keep
yeah.
the people oppressed, everybody. See, if you kill a Christian, you're not going to go to jail. This is true in Mubarak's days, true in the Muslim Brotherhood's days, and true today.
Right.
It continues
so it's
to
always
be true
bad.
Because
it's just it varies by degree, so it's always bad, and that's probably true of any Muslim majority country where Christians live.
That's unfortunately correct. Yes,
yeah.
There is always the Christian is always looked. He really wouldn't count, and in
wow.
some cases, it's looked at like what you take out of the Christians, or if you take the Christians, that's something good to do. So it really depends how radical you are when it comes to how you treat Christians or how you think of Christians. And it's not just the Christians, Dave. It's about the other.
Yeah.
It's anything that has to do with the other. Now, especially Christians, because Christians, according to what Muslims believe, that Christians say there are three gods, Jesus and the Father and the Holy Spirit. And, of course, that's the worst blasphemy that you can say. So that's why perhaps Christians are targeted more. But at the end of the day, it's anybody who does not agree and does not buy or abide by what Islam says.
Yeah. That's just, it's what really bothers me is that this does not get, I know a lot of this stuff, of course, because I follow it, and a lot of the people that are probably listening follow it, but the average American, they're certainly not hearing this from our press, and it's outrageous. I've got to do a quick read here, but there's nothing more outrageous to an American than an innocent person being wrongly convicted for a crime they didn't commit. We'll talk about injustice. You've been describing injustice here. But sunshine is the best disinfectant. Get some insight on the dark side of the judicial system Tuesdays on Just Cause with Sam Thurman and Cliff Stewart on conservativenationmedia.com. Sam and Cliff take a hard look at what happens when the wheels of justice trample the rights of innocent Americans. These are real cases of real people who are actually innocent but who are wrongly convicted. Join us for a Just Cause Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. We are talking with Nader Fahmy about Christian persecution in Egypt. Now, you still have family in Egypt, and I'm sure you're in touch with them as much as possible. You seem to indicate that maybe things are getting a little better because people no longer want the Islamists. Is that the trend?
That is correct. It appeared, especially immediately after they threw out Morsi, it appeared that things are getting better. Even though the military is not very fair to the people, shall we say, and they do not allow the people to say what they want, which is very similar to what Mubarak did, what was going on in Mubarak's days. But look, anything is better than a Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Anything is better than the Muslim Brotherhood. Even Mubarak's days were better than a Muslim Brotherhood.
Even in Mubarak's days, or the guy Sadat's days, from what you're telling me, if a Christian is killed, if a Christian woman is raped, if Christian property is destroyed or whatever, they're not going to get justice. I mean, the government's going to come to their defense.
No, they never get justice. Christians never get justice in Egypt. And if they get justice, it's a joke. Like, for example, there was a guy he was the one who killed the Christians leaving church on either New Year's Eve or Christmas night. I think it was Christmas night. Well, that happened several times, but the first time it happened, it was all over the news and the media. These guys, they actually arrested him and prosecuted him. And I think he got like 2-3 years or 10 years, and then he left the jail and they decided that he was crazy and he should be put somewhere else. And eventually the guy is out on the street. There is a guy who actually decided to convert to Christianity because when he went to jail, he was being treated as a hero. He's a really tough little guy. I can't think of his name. But that's what happened to those people when they go to jail over killing a Christian. If they go to jail, they are treated like heroes because...
What about women over there? I mean... There's a lot of sexual assault, a lot of rape over there, and there's no recourse, nothing happens. I mean, I know that during the Terrafar Square thing a couple years ago, we had one of our reporters over there that was raped, Laura Logan. But, I mean, I guess this is something that Christian women deal with it's a daily threat.
It is a daily threat. Well, women all over in Egypt are treated bad. Now, as you probably also know, that under Islam, a woman does not have as much rights, does not have, she's really not being treated as a human being. She's being treated more of something for the man's enjoyment than to serve the man. Now, once a Christian woman is on the street with her head not covered, she's in trouble in some way or the other. She's subject to any kind of humiliation that might happen. It depends who's on the street there.
Wow.
What's the popular practice that happens over and over and over again, and it's very sad, really, it breaks the people's heart, is what they do to younger girls. They kidnap younger girls. Now, I happen to see several families that I personally know. They kidnap younger girls. They keep them somewhere in a house, and they convince them that they must marry this guy, and that guy usually is, of course, Muslim. Or else they're going to kill her. And, of course, in order for her to marry him, she has to convert to Muslim. And a younger girl usually end up taking what they offer her, which is to convert to Muslim and marry the guy. And, of course, she married a guy, and the guy's going to make her pregnant, and that's pretty much the end of her. The end of her, any attempts to come back to her normal life. Of course, they go to her parents and they tell them that the girl just chose to be Muslim and she just escaped their place because they wouldn't like that she converted to Islam. But she did that upon her own will, which everyone knows that that's not true. Now, on the other hand, if you're a Muslim and you want to be Christian, of course, that's a big crime. You go to jail for that and you're subject to being killed because that's upstate. They call you an upstate.
Yeah.
If you convert from Islam to Christianity or to any other religion for that matter.
Now, what other religions do they have over there in Egypt that are persecuted?
There are very few Jewish in Egypt. And, of course, there are no atheists. If there are atheists, they would have stoned them long time ago.
Yeah. Wow. So you've been over here since the 90s then?
Yeah, about 97.
Yeah. And there's a pretty big, I was surprised, I can't remember the number, but I remember it was pretty high, the number of Coptic families in Tennessee, primarily in Nashville?
Yeah, I think the Coptic Church has about 10,000 families around Nashville, or in Tennessee, over Tennessee.
You guys had there was a rally protesting the Muslim Brotherhood that the Coptic Christians put on in Nashville a few months ago, or maybe it was longer than that.
So
you guys did, one or two
ago.
Of them.
We didn't really get a whole lot of coverage. We didn't get a whole lot of coverage, and we didn't get a whole lot of participation either. See, the Christians in Egypt are the last group of people who usually participate on these things. People are very peaceful. They don't want to participate in anything. They don't want to bother with anything. They just want to stick to their day-to-day life. Most of them, of course.
Yeah. Well, now, did any of the press ask you guys anything?
Not on the last one. I think the one time we went before, when 11 people was killed in another event, that was like 2-3 years ago. That one, I think the media covered it in about 90 seconds on Channel 5, if I'm not mistaken, or 30 seconds, something like that. But no, not the last one, no.
Wow.
The Muslim Brotherhood, too, as far as a lot of people in Egypt believe, is supported by our administration here in America. And that alone tells you why they didn't get any coverage, I guess. It's very obvious.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that was one of the biggest... Go ahead.
Well, again, it's disgusting. For those of us who know, I mean, that we have Muslim Brotherhood that have been appointed to high positions in Homeland Security. And, of course, in Tennessee, I'm sure you know that
we do.
You know the deal there. We're not much better here than what – our governor's not much better than our president on that issue. Do you think that the Coptic population in Tennessee will maybe speak out a little more and maybe try to educate people on the threat? I mean,
we try to educate people, but people usually must come to us. But we don't take the initiative to try to educate people. We don't take the initiative to tell who we are and where we come from and our story. We usually don't do that. Like I said,
I think it would be very powerful.
It would, because you'd hear it from the people who experienced it firsthand. But unfortunately, the majority of us don't.
Yeah. We've got Kurt Blackwood on the line. Hey, Kurt, do you have any questions or comments for Nader?
Hey, Kurt.
Yes, as a matter of fact, first of all, I'm going to take a shot at seeing if I can pronounce your first name the way you would. Not there.
Nader? Okay, Dave, right, my bad. Yeah, I was wondering if you have access to data on persecution, which could probably be broken out into different categories. I'm thinking in terms of the number of Christians that were killed, martyred, churches destroyed, damaged, or burned, and any other category of persecution that you can think of. If you had data available that goes back, say, 100 years, you spoke about the problems getting worse in the 70s. The thought crossed my mind, I'd be interested in seeing a comparison chart to see by the decade how it's increased and what percentages, et cetera. Do you suppose you have access to any data like that?
Well, you're probably right. I should have had that video with me, but I didn't. I think I should. I don't have any numbers with me, but...
Well, okay, do me this favor. If you have that, give that to Dave, and he'll get it to me, okay?
Sure, yeah, I definitely can do that. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Problem.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
We can check with Bill Warner, too. He may have some of that as well. I know he does a bulletin on the persecution of Christians in Egypt and elsewhere through the Middle East. But, you know, I do think that would be that would have a big impact, and I understand that some of them might be hesitant to do that. But, you know, we have the problem here. We don't have it like you had it there, but we have the same actors here. And
we have the problem
rather here. We definitely have the problem here, and we have politicians that are either in cahoots or just – too stupid to know who they're dealing with. You know, they believe all the flowery crap that the flowery garbage that the Islamists tell them. They buy it all hook, line, and sinker. And I really think hearing from people who have been persecuted and can tell the story firsthand, I think that would be very powerful, and maybe that would wake up a few more of our citizens and maybe some of our legislators.
I think the wake-up needs to happen to the people, not to the legislative. I don't think that the legislatives are not aware of who they're dealing with. I think they are well aware of who they're dealing with, but they just simply do not care. I don't think that they look really for the best interest of the American people, and if they do, they would have acted different. But the more awareness among the average regular American is what will change that. But as long as the regular American person can care of less, then the politicians will be able to do what they want to do, because that's what everybody else is doing, and that's what the big administration is promoting. Why would he go against it? Think about it. If he want to keep his office, he's going to go with what's going on.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, we got to get the more people knowing will put the pressure on the legislators. That and I know many of them do know, and there are a few good ones out there that fight the fight. Not enough of them. Nader, we've got about a minute left. I want to thank you for coming on. I'd like to have you back. And if you have any parting comments you'd like to make.
I appreciate you having me, Dave. It was very nice to be here. I appreciate that I had the opportunity to tell Tennesseans about the conflict in Egypt and to perhaps let them look at the issue and start finding out who our legislators are dealing with and how we can promote even more knowledgeable American people about the issue. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, and then thank you for coming on. God bless you, and Merry Christmas.
I appreciate it. Merry Christmas to you all. Bye-bye.
All right. You take care. Well, I thank everybody for listening. Thank you, Kurt. Appreciate everybody out there who tuned in. Everybody have a Merry Christmas, and we'll see you next week.